narrow it down, she thought. So she tried to focus on ceremonies which take place under contention, or in time of war. Even under those constraints, she found it hard slogging. Everything was all so complicated. It made her despair over the shared ignorance of her people and clan. Whether an agreement of co-participation is or is not made in advance, it can and shall be verified by the institutes in a manner taking into account methods of adjudication considered traditional by the two or more parties involved. Galet did not recall falling asleep on the beanbag, but for some time it was a raft floating upon a dim sea which rocked to the rhythm of her breathing. After a while, mists seemed to close in, coalescing into a black and white dreamscape of vaguely threatening shapes. She saw contorted images of the dead, her parents, and poor Max.
No,
she muttered. At one point she jerked sharply.
No!
She started to rise, began to emerge from slumber. Her eyes fluttered, fragments of dreams clinging in shreds to the lids. A guru seemed to hover overhead, holding a mysterious device, like those which had probed and peered at her and Fibbon. But the image wavered, then fell apart as the avian pressed a button on the machine. She slumped back, the guru image rejoining the many others in her disturbed sleep. The dream state passed, and her breathing settled into the slow cycle of deep somnolence. She only awoke some time later when she dimly sensed a hand stroke her leg. Then it seized her ankle and pulled hard. Galet's breath caught as she sat up quickly, before she could even bring her eyes to focus. Her heart raced. Then vision cleared, and she saw that a rather large Chim squatted beside her. His hand still rested on her leg, and his grin was instantly recognizable. The waxed handlebar mustache was only the most superficial of many attributes she had come to detest. So suddenly drawn out of sleep, she had to take a moment to find speech again.
What are you doing here?
She asked acerbically, yanking her leg away from his grasp. Iron Grip looked amused.
Now, is that the way to say hello to someone as important as I am to you?
You do serve your purpose well, she admitted, as a bad example.
Galet rubbed her eyes and sat up.
You didn't answer my question. Why are you bothering me? Your incompetent probies aren't in charge of guarding anybody anymore.
The Chen's expression soured only slightly. Obviously, he was relishing something.
Oh, I just figured I ought to come on down to the library and do some studying, just like you.
You? Studying? Here? She laughed. I had to get special permission from the suzerain. You're not even supposed...
Now, those were the exact words I was about to use, he interrupted.
Galet blinked.
What?
I mean, I was going to tell you that the suzerain told me to come down here and study with you. After all, partners ought to get to know each other well, especially before they step forward together as race representatives.
Galet's breath drew inaudibly.
You?
Her head whirled.
I don't believe you.
Iron Grip shrugged.
You needn't sound so surprised. My genetic scores are in the high 90s, almost across the board, except in two or three little categories that shouldn't ever have counted in the first place.
That Galet could believe easily enough. Iron Grip was obviously clever and resourceful, and his aberrant strength could only be considered an asset by the Uplift Board. But sometimes the price was just too great to pay.
All that means is that your loathsome qualities must be even worse than I had imagined.
The Chen rocked back and laughed.
Oh, by human standards, I suppose you're right, he agreed. By those criteria, most probationers shouldn't be allowed anywhere near chimneys and children. Still, standards change. And now I have the opportunity to set a new style.
Gaylord felt a chill. It was just sinking in what Iron Grip was driving at.
You're a liar.
Admitted, mea culpa.
He pretended to beat his breast.
But I'm not lying about being in the testing party, along with a few of my fellow Donner boys. There have been some changes, you see, since your little mama's boy and teacher's pet ran off into the jungle with our Sylvie.
Gaylord wanted to spit.
Fibbin's 10 times the Chen you are, you atavistic mistake. The suzerain of propriety would never choose you as his replacement.
Iron Grip grinned and raised a finger.
Aha! There's where we misunderstand each other. You see, we've been talking about different birds, you and I.
Different?
Gaylord gasped. Her hand covered the open collar of her shirt.
Oh, Goodall!
You got it, he said, nodding. Smart, aristophrenic little monkey you are.
Gaylord slumped. What surprised her most was the depth of her mourning. At that moment she felt as if her heart had been torn out.
We were pawns all along, she thought. Oh, poor Fibbin.
This explained why Fibbin had not been brought back the evening he took off with Sylvie, or the next day, or the next. Gaylord had been so sure that the escape would turn out to have been just another propriety and intelligence test. But clearly it wasn't. It had to have been arranged by one or both of the other Gubru commanders, perhaps as a way to weaken the suzerain of propriety. And what better way to do that than by robbing it of one of its most carefully chosen Chim race representatives? The theft couldn't even be pinned on anybody, for no body would ever be found. Of course, the Gubru would have to go ahead with the ceremony. It was too late to recall the invitations, but each of the three suzerains might prefer to see different outcomes.
Fibbin.
So, Professor, where do we start? You can start teaching me how to act like a proper white card now.
She closed her eyes and shook her head.
Go away, she said. Just please go away.
There were more words, more sarcastic comments, but she blocked them out behind a numbing curtain of pain. Tears, at least, she managed to withhold until she sensed that he was gone. Then she burrowed into the soft bag as if it was her mother's arms and wept. Chapter 75 Galactics. The other two danced around the pedestal, puffing and cooing. Together they chanted in perfect harmony.
Come down, come down, down, come down, come down off your perch. Join us, join us, us, join us in consensus.
The suzerain of propriety shivered, fighting the changes. They were completely united in opposition now. The suzerain of cost and caution had given up hope of achieving the prized position, and was supporting the suzerain of beam and talon in its bid for dominance. Caution's objective was now second place, the male molt status. 2 out of 3 had agreed then. But in order to achieve their objectives, both sexual and in policy, they had to bring the suzerain of propriety down off its perch. They had to force it to step onto the soil of Garth. The suzerain of propriety fought them, squawking well-timed counterpoint to disrupt their rhythm and inserting pronouncements of logic to foil their arguments. A proper molt was not supposed to go this way. This was coercion. Not true consensus. This was rape. For this, the Roostmasters had not invested so much hope in the triumvirate. They needed policy, wisdom, The other two seemed to have forgotten this. They wanted to take the easy way out with the uplift ceremony. They wanted to make a terrible gamble in defiance of the codes. If only the first suzerain of Cost and Caution had lived. The priest mourned. Sometimes one only knew the value of another after that one was gone. Gone.
Come down. Come down. Down off your perch.
Against their united voice, it was only a matter of time, of course. Their unison pierced through the wall of honor and resolve the priest had built around itself and penetrated down to the realm of hormone and instinct. The molt hung suspended, held back by the recalcitrance of one member. But it would not be forestalled forever.
Come down and join us. Join us in consensus.
The suzerain of propriety shuddered and held on. How much longer it could do so, it did not know. Chapter 76 The Caves.
Clenny! Robert shouted joyfully.
When he saw the mounted figures come around a bend in the trail, he nearly dropped his end of the missile he and Achim were carrying out of the caves.
Hey, watch it with that thing, you... Captain.
One of Prathachulthorn's marine corporals corrected himself at the last second. In recent weeks they had begun treating Robert with more respect. He'd been earning it. But on occasion, the non-com still showed their fundamental contempt for anyone non-core. Another chim worker hurried up and easily lifted the nose cone out of Robert's grasp, looking disgusted that a human should even try lifting things. Robert ignored both insults. He ran to the trailhead just as the band of travelers arrived and caught the halter of Athaclena's horse. His other hand reached out for her.
Clenny, I'm glad you...
His voice faltered for an instant. Even as she squeezed his hand, he blinked and tried to cover up his discomfiture.
I'm glad you could come.
Athaclena's smile was unlike any he remembered her ever wearing before, and there was sadness in her aura that he had never kenned.
Of course I came, Robert, she smiled. Could you ever doubt I would?
He helped her dismount. Underneath her superficial air of control, he could feel her tremble.
Love, you have gone through changes.
As if she sensed his thought, she reached up and touched the side of his face.
There are a few ideas shared by both Galactic Society and yours, Robert. In both, sages have spoken of life as being something like a wheel.
A wheel?
Yes.
Her eyes glittered.
It turns, it moves forward, and yet it remains the same.
With a sense of relief, he felt her again. Underneath the changes, she was still Athaclena.
I missed you, he said. And I you,
she smiled.
Now tell me about this Major and his plans.
Robert paced the floor of the tiny storage chamber, stacked to the overhead stalactites with supplies.
I can argue with him, I can try persuasion. Hell, he doesn't even mind if I yell at him, so long as it's in private, and so long as, after all the debate is over, I still leap 2 meters when he says jump.
Robert shook his head.
But I can't actively obstruct him, Clenny. Don't ask me to break my oath.
Robert obviously felt caught between conflicting loyalties. Athaclena could sense his tension. His arm still in a sling, Fibbon Bolger watched them argue, but he kept his silence for the time being. Athaclena shook her head.
Robert, I explained to you that what Major Prathachulthorn has planned is likely to prove disastrous.
Then tell him!
Of course she had tried, over dinner that very evening. Prathachulthorn had listened courteously to her careful explanation of the possible consequences of attacking the Gubru ceremonial site. His expression had been indulgent. But when she had finished, he only asked one question. Would the assault be considered one against the Earthling's legitimate enemy, or against the Uplift Institute itself?
After the delegation from the Institute arrives, the site becomes their property, she had said. An attack then would be catastrophic for humanity.
But before then? He had asked archly.
Athaklena had shaken her head irritably.
Until then, the Gubru still own the site, but it's not a military site. It was built for what might be called holy purposes. The propriety of the act, without handling it just right...
It had gone on for some time, until it became clear that all argument would be useless. Prathachulthorn promised to take her opinions into account, ending the matter. They all knew what the Marine officer thought of taking advice from E.T. children.
"We'll send a message to Megan," Robert suggested.
"I believe you have already done that,"
Athaklena answered. He scowled, confirming her guess. Of course, it violated all protocol to go over Prathachulthorn's head. At minimum, it would seem like a spoiled boy crying to Mama. It might even be a court-martial offense. That he had done so proved that it wasn't out of fear for himself that Robert was reticent about directly opposing his commander, but out of loyalty to his sworn oath. Indeed, he was right. Athaklena respected his honor.
"But I am not ruled by the same duty," she thought.
Thibin, who had been silent so far, met her gaze. He rolled his eyes expressively. About Robert, they were in complete agreement.
"I already suggested to the Major that knocking out the ceremonial site might actually be doing the enemy a favor. After all, they built it to use on Garthlings. Whatever their scheme with us Chims, it's probably a last-ditch effort to make up some of their losses. But what if the site is insured? We blow it up, they blame us and collect."
"Major Prathachulthorn mentioned your idea about that,"
Athaklena said to Thibin.
"I find it acute, but I'm afraid he did not credit it as very likely."
"You mean he thought it was a cuckoo pile of apes?"
He stopped, as they heard footsteps on the cool stone outside.
"Knock, knock,"
a feminine voice said from behind the curtain.
"May I come in?" "Please do, Lieutenant McHugh,"
Athaklena said.
"We were nearly finished anyway."
The dusky-skinned human woman entered and sat on one of the crates next to Robert. He gave her a faint smile, but soon was staring down at his hands again. The muscles in his arms rippled and tensed as his fists clenched and unclenched. Athaklena felt a twinge when McHugh placed her hand on Robert's knee and spoke to him.
"His Nibs wants another battle-planning conference before we all turn in."
She turned to look at Athaklena and smiled, her head inclined.
"You're welcome to attend, should you wish. You're our respected guest, Athaklena."
Athaklena recalled when she had been the mistress of these caverns and had commanded an army.
"I must not let that influence me," she reminded herself.
All that mattered now was to see that these creatures harmed themselves as little as possible in the coming days. And, if at all possible, she was dedicated to furthering a certain jest, one that she herself still barely understood, but had recently come to appreciate.
"No, thank you, Lieutenant. I think that I shall go say hello to a few of my Chim friends and then retire. It was a long, several days' ride."
Robert glanced back at her as he left with his human lover. Over his head a metaphorical cloud seemed to hover, flickering with lightning strokes.
"I did not know you could do that with glyphs,"
Athaklena wondered. Every day it seemed one learned something new. Thibin's loose, unhinged grin was a boost as he followed the humans. Did she catch a sense of something from him? A conspiratorial wink? When they were gone, Athaklana started rummaging through her kit.
"I am not bound by their duty," she reminded herself, "or by their laws."
The caves could get quite dark, especially when one extinguished the solitary glow bulb that illuminated an entire stretch of the hallway. Down here, eyesight was not an advantage, but a Timbrimi corona gave quite an edge. Athaklana crafted a small squadron of simple but special glyphs. The first one had the sole purpose of darting ahead of her and to the sides, scouting out a path through the blackness. Since cold, hard matter was searing to that which was not, it was easy to tell where the walls and obstacles lay. The little wisp of nothing avoided them adroitly. Another glyph spun overhead, reaching forth to make certain that no one was aware of an intruder in these lower levels. There were no chims sleeping in this stretch of hallway, which had been set aside for human officers. Lydia and Robert were out on patrol. That left only one aura beside hers in this part of the cave. Athaklana stepped toward it carefully. The third glyph silently gathered strength, awaiting its turn. Slowly, silently, she padded over the packed dung of a thousand generations of flying insectivore creatures who had dwelt here until being ousted by earthlings and their noise. She breathed evenly, counting in the silent human fashion to help maintain the discipline of her thoughts. Keeping three watchful glyphs up at once was something she'd not have attempted only a few days ago. Now it seemed easy, natural, as if she had done it hundreds of times. She had ripped this and so many other skills away from Utha Calving, using a technique seldom spoken of among the Timbrimi, and even less often tried.
"Turning jungle fighter, trysting with a human, and now this. Oh, my classmates would be amazed."
She wondered if her father retained any of the craft she had so rudely taken from him.
"Father, you and mother arranged this long ago. You prepared me without my even knowing it. Did you already know, even then, that it would be necessary someday?"
Sadly, she suspected she had taken away more than Utha Calving could afford to spare.
"And yet, it is not enough."
There were huge gaps. In her heart, she felt certain that this thing encompassing worlds and species could not reach its conclusion without her father himself. The scout glyph hovered before a hanging strip of cloth. Athaklana approached, unable to see the covering, even after she touched it with her fingertips. The scout unraveled and melted back into the waving tendrils of her corona. She brushed the cloth aside with deliberate slowness and crept into the small side chamber. The watch glyph sensed no sign that anyone was aware within. She only kenned the steady rhythms of human slumber. Major Prathachulthorn did not snore, of course, and his sleep was light, vigilant. She stroked the edges of his ever-present psi shield, which guarded his thoughts, dreams, and military knowledge.
"Their soldiers are good, and getting better," she thought.
Over the years, Timbrimi advisors had worked hard to teach their wolfling allies to be fierce galactic warriors, and the Timbrimi, in truth, often came away having learned some fascinating bits of trickery themselves. Ideas that could never have been imagined by a race brought up under galactic culture. But of all Earth's services, the Terrigan's Marines used no alien advisors. They were anachronisms, the true wolflings. The glyph, Zichuton, cautiously approached the slumbering human, It settled down, and Ethiclena saw it metaphorically as a globe of liquid metal. It touched Prethachulthorn's psi shield and slid in golden rivulets over it, swiftly coating it under a fine sheen. Ethiclena breathed a little easier. Her hand slipped into her pocket and withdrew a glassy ampule. She stepped closer and carefully knelt next to the cot. As she brought the vial of anesthetic gas near the sleeping man's face, her fingers tensed.
"I wouldn't," he said casually.
Ethiclena gasped. Before she could move, his hands darted out, catching her wrists. In the dim light, all she could see were the whites of his eyes. Although he was awake, his psi shield remained undisturbed, still radiating waves of slumber. She realized that it had been a phantasm all along, a carefully fabricated trap.
"UETs just have to keep on underrating us, don't you? Even you smarty-pants Tim Brimmy never seem to get it."
Gear hormones surged. Ethiclena heaved and pulled to get free, but it was like trying to escape a metal vise. Her clawed nails scratched, but he nimbly kept her fingers out of reach of his calloused hands. When she tried to roll aside and kick, he deftly applied slight pressure to her arms, using them as levers to keep her on her knees. The force made her groan aloud. The gas pellet tumbled from her limp hand.
"You see," Prethachulthorn said, in an amiable voice, "there are some of us who think it's a mistake to compromise at all. What can we accomplish by trying to turn ourselves into good galactic citizens?" He sneered. "Even if it worked, we'd only become horrors, awful things, totally divorced from what it means to be human. Anyway, that option isn't even open. They won't let us become citizens. The deck is stacked. The dice are loaded. We both know that, don't we?"
Athaclena's breath came in ragged gasps. Long after it was clearly useless, the gear flux kept her jerking and fighting against the human's incredible strength. Agility and quickness were to no avail against his reflexes and training.
"We have our secrets, you know," Prethachulthorn confided. "Things we do not tell our Timbrimi friends, or even most of our own people. Would you like to know what they are? Would you?"
Ethiclena could not find the breath to answer. Prethachulthorn's eyes held something feral, almost animally fierce.
"Well, if I told you some of them, it would be your death sentence," he said. "And I'm not ready to decide that quite yet, so I'll tell you one fact some of your people already know."
In an instant, he had transferred both of her wrists to one hand. The other sought and found her throat.
"You see, we Marines are also taught how to disable and even kill members of an allied ET race. Would you like to know how long it will take me to render you unconscious, miss? Tell you what, why don't you start counting?"
Ethiclena heaved and bucked, but it was useless. A painful pressure closed in around her throat. Air started getting thick. Distantly, she heard Prethachulthorn mutter to himself,
"This universe is a goddamn awful place."
She would never have imagined it could get blacker. But an even deeper darkness started closing in. Ethiclena wondered if she would ever awaken again.
"I'm sorry, Father."
She expected those to be her last thoughts. Continued consciousness came as something of a surprise then. The pressure on her throat, still painful, eased ever so slightly. She sucked a narrow stream of air and tried to figure out what was happening. Prethachulthorn's arms were quivering. She could tell he was bearing down hard, but somehow the force wasn't arriving. Her overheated corona was no help. It was in total ignorance and amazement, when Prethachulthorn's grip loosened, that she dropped limply to the floor. The human was breathing hard now. There were grunts of exertion and then a crash as the cot toppled over. A water pitcher shattered, and there was a sound like that a data well would make, getting smashed. Atheclena felt something under her hand. The ampule, she realized. But what had happened to Prathet Shulthorn? Fighting enzyme exhaustion, she crawled in a random direction until her hand came down upon the broken data well. By accident, her fingers brushed the power switch, and the rugged machine's screen spilled forth a dim luminescence. In that glow, Atheclena saw a stark tableau. The human Mel straining, his powerful muscles bulged and sinewy, against two long brown arms that held him from behind. Prathet Shulthorn bucked and hissed. He threw his weight left and right, but every effort to get free was to no avail. Atheclena saw a pair of brown eyes over the man's shoulder. She hesitated for only a moment, then hurried forward with the ampule. Now Prathet Shulthorn had no psi shield. His hatred was open for all to ken if they had the power. He heaved desperately as she brought forward the little cylinder and broke it under his nose.
"He's holding his breath," the neo-chimpanzee muttered, as the cloud of blue vapor hovered around the man's nostrils, then slowly fell groundward.
"That is all right," Atheclena answered. From her pocket she drew forth 10 more.
When he saw them, Prathet Shulthorn let out a faint sigh. He redoubled his efforts to get away, but all it served was to bring closer the moment when he would finally have to breathe. The man was stubborn. It took 5 minutes, and even then Atheclena suspected he had fainted of anoxia before he ever felt the drug.
"Some guy," Bivens said when he finally let go. "Good all, they make them marines strong."
He shuddered and collapsed next to the unconscious man. Atheclena sat limply across from him.
"Thank you, Fibbin,"
she said quietly. He shrugged.
"Hell, what's treason and assault on a patron? All in a day's work."
She indicated his sling, where his left arm had rested ever since the evening of his escape from Port Helena.
"Oh, this?"
Fibbin grinned.
"Well, I guess I have been milking the sympathy a bit. Please don't tell anybody, okay?"
Then, in a more serious mood, he looked down at Prathet Shulthorn.
"I may not be any expert, but I'll bet I didn't win any points with the old uplift board tonight."
He glanced up at Atheclena, then smiled faintly. In spite of everything she had been through, she found she could not help but find everything, suddenly, hilarious. She found herself laughing, quietly, but with her father's rich tones. Somehow that did not surprise her at all. The job wasn't over. Wearily, Atheclena had to follow as Fibbin carried the unconscious human through the dim tunnels. As they tiptoed past Prathet Shulthorn's dozing corporal, Atheclena reached out with her tender, almost limp tendrils, and soothed the marine's slumber. He mumbled and rolled over on his cot. Especially wary now, Atheclena made doubly sure the man's psi shield was no ruse, that he actually slept soundly. Fibbin puffed, his lips curled back in a grimace, as she led him over a tumbled slope of debris from an ancient landslide and into a side passage that was almost certainly unknown to the Marines. At least, it wasn't on the cave map she had accessed earlier today from the Rebel database. Fibbin's aura was pungent each time he stubbed his toes in the dim, twisting climb. No doubt he wanted to mutter imprecations over Prathet Shulthorn's dense weight, but he kept his comments within until they emerged at last into the humid, silent night.
"Sports and mutations," he sighed as he laid his burden down. "At least Prathet Shulthorn isn't one of the tall ones. I couldn't have managed with his hands and feet dragging in the dust all the way."
He sniffed the air. There was no moon, but a fog spilled over the nearby cliffs like a vaporous flood, and it gave off a faint lambience. Pippin glanced back at Athaclana.
So? Now what, chief? There's going to be a hornet's nest here in a few hours, especially after Robert and that Lieutenant McHugh get back. You want I should go get Tycho and haul away this bad example to Earthling clients for you? It'll mean deserting, but what the hell, I guess I was never a very good soldier.
Athaclana shook her head. She sought with her corona and found the traces she was looking for.
No, Pippin, I could not ask that of you. Besides, you have another task. You escaped from Port Helena in order to warn us of the Gubru offer. Now you must return there and face your destiny.
Pippin frowned.
Are you sure you don't need me?
Athaclana brought her hands over her mouth. She trilled the soft call of a nightbird. From the darkness downslope there came a faint reply. She turned back to Pippin.
Of course I do. We all need you, but where you can do the most good is down there, near the sea. I also sense that you want to go back.
Pippin pulled at his thumbs.
Gotta be crazy, I guess.
She smiled.
No, it is only one more indicator that the suzerain of propriety knew its business in choosing you, even though it might prefer that you showed a little more respect to your patrons.
Pippin tensed. Then he seemed to sense some of her irony. He smiled. There was the soft clattering of horses' hooves on the trail below.
All right, he said as he bent over to pick up the limp form of Major Prathachulthorn. Come on, Papa. This time I'll be as gentle as I would with my own maiden aunt.
He smacked his lips against the marine's shadowed cheek and looked up at Athaclana.
Better, ma'am?
Something she had borrowed from her father made her tired tendrils fizz.
Yes, Pippin,
she laughed.
That's much better.
Lydia and Robert had their suspicions when they returned by the dawn's light to find their legal commander missing. The remaining Terrigan's marines glared at Athaclana in open distrust. A small band of chims had gone through Prathachulthorn's room, cleaning away all signs of struggle before any humans got there. But they couldn't hide the fact that Prathachulthorn had gone, without a note or any trace. Robert even ordered Athaclana restricted to her chamber, with a marine at the door while they investigated. His relief over a likely delay in the planned attack was momentarily suppressed under an outraged sense of duty. In comparison, Lieutenant McHugh was an eddy of calm. Outwardly, she seemed unconcerned, as if the Major had merely stepped out. Only Athaclana could sense the Earthwoman's underlying confusion and conflict. In any event, there was nothing they could do about it. Search parties were sent out. They caught up with a party of Athaclana's chims returning on horseback to the gorilla refuge. But by that time, Prathachulthorn was no longer with them. He was high in the trees, being passed from one forest giant to another. By now, conscious and fuming, but helpless and trussed up like a mummy. It was a case of humans paying the penalty for their liberalism. They had brought up their clients to be individualists and citizens, so it was possible for chims to rationalize imprisoning one man for the good of all. In his own way, Prathachulthorn had helped to bring this about, with his patronizing, deprecating attitudes. Nevertheless, Athaclana was certain the marine would be delicately, carefully treated. That evening, Robert chaired a new council of war. Athaclana's vague status of house arrest was modified, so she could attend. Pippin and the Chim Brevet lieutenants were present, as well as the Marine non-commissioned officers. Neither Lydia nor Robert brought up going ahead with Prathachulthorn's plan. It was tacitly assumed that the Major wouldn't want it put underway without him.
Maybe he went off on a personal scouting trip,
or a snap inspection of some outpost? He might return tonight or tomorrow.
Elaine Sue suggested in complete innocence.
Maybe. We'd best assume the worst, though, Robert said.
He avoided looking at Athaklena.
Just in case, we'd better send word to the refuge. I suppose it'll take 10 days or so to get new orders from the council, and for them to send a replacement.
He obviously assumed that Megan Oneagle would never leave him in charge.
Well, I want to go back to Port Helena, Fibbins said simply. I'm in a position to get close to the center of things, and anyway, Galet needs me.
What makes you think the Gubru will take you back after running away?
Lydia McHugh asked.
Why won't they simply shoot you?
Fibbins shrugged.
If I meet up with the wrong Gubru, that's what they'll probably do.
There was a long silence. When Robert asked for other suggestions, the humans and remaining Chims remained silent. At least when Pratha Chulthorn had been there, dominating the discourse and the mood, there had been his overbearing confidence to override their doubts. Now the situation came home to them again. They were a tiny army with only limited options. And the enemy was about to set into motion things and events they could not even understand, let alone prevent. Athaklena waited until the atmosphere was thick with gloom. Then she said 4 words.
We need my father.
To her surprise, both Robert and Lydia nodded. Even when orders finally arrived from the Council in Exile, those instructions would likely be as confused and contradictory as ever. It was obvious that they could use good advice, especially with matters of galactic diplomacy at stake.
At least the McHugh woman does not share Pratha Chulthorn's xenophobia,
Athaklena thought. She found herself forced to admit that she approved of what she kenned of the Earthling female's aura.
Robert told me you were sure your father was alive,
Lydia said.
That's fine, but where is he? How can we find him?
Athaklena leaned forward. She kept her corona still.
I know where he is.
You do? Robert blinked.
But...
His voice trailed off as he reached out to touch her with his inner sense, for the first time since yesterday. Athaklena recalled how she felt then, seeing him holding Lydia's hand. She momentarily resisted his efforts, then, feeling foolish, she let go. Robert sat back heavily and exhaled. He blinked several times.
Oh.
That was all he said. Now Lydia looked back and forth, from Robert to Athaklena and back again. Briefly, she shone with something faintly like envy.
I, too, have him in a way that you cannot,
Athaklena mused. But mostly she shared the moment with Robert.
N'tahu, Utha Kalvi,
he said in Gal 7.
We had better do something, and fast.